Welcome to the 2012 Grand Final, your Supercoach Coach podcast. This week we're joined by Mark, or FB Donkey.
G'day, everyone.
And we'll start off this week as we do every single week, and that's by letting you guys know exactly how we scored on the weekend. Mark, I think we both had pretty good weekends. I think I'm into a couple of league grand finals. How about yourself, Mark?
Yeah, I think I made just about all the league grand finals except for one. I lost by 2 points. And unfortunately lost to my wife, who is just steamrolling at the moment. Is currently ranked 650.
I scored 24.76, which was pretty good. Was disappointed with Johnson. Only 103 as my captain. Judd, I brought him in to my team for Selwood. He got me 55 points. Oh, that trade got me 55 points over Gibson. But I would have liked more from Judd. Yeah, pretty good enough to shoot me up a bit in the ranking. So I'm up to 230th and I'm hoping to catch my ranking of last year. I think that was about 180. So a top 150 finish would be good, but I think anything above 180 I'd be very happy with. Mark, how'd you go?
Well, I think I beat you by about 30 points this week, mate. I scored 25.02, and seeing as in the YSCC Aces Grand Final this week, we actually meet in the third-ranked overall league, so hopefully I can beat you again this week and then it'll all be worthwhile. I'm just shooting for glory, really. I've ranked 1300, probably unlikely to get into the top 1000, so really just looking to win some league grand finals this week. Very happy with Treloar again. I think I'm gonna have to play him ahead of Stanton this week. Took the captaincy off Ablett, went with Beams and lost like 1 point, so that wasn't too bad in the end. Yeah, just had some huge scorers like Naidenui and Pendlebury and Pritis and Deledio. So yeah, I've still got a trade left and hopefully I can ride it through to a grand final victory this week.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting that we're meeting up in the league grand final, Mark, in the Aces League, and I think we're about 2 points per person in our league behind the second ranked team and 28 behind first. So it's definitely achievable. It'd be awesome if you know, the two podcast hosts can face off and play each other in the grand final of the number one ranked league. But I think just dreaming big for now.
Very tight battle at the top for the top three leagues going into the last round.
Yep. Okay, so Mark, this show, we're not going to look very much at the grand final week this week, but more just take a look at the season that has been, look at some of the trades that we've made, any golden rules. You know, we always talk about the Supercoach golden rules that maybe have changed because of how the game is played now or because of the sub rule, and just maybe look towards a few players that we wouldn't mind having next year ourselves. So just a pretty fun chat, Mark, to wrap up the season. I think something like 30 eps that we've done on the podcast so far this season, and it's been a great year of footy so far.
Is this our fourth year, I think? So, yeah probably over 100 episodes now.
Yeah, I'd say comfortably.
So, worst moves. Now, mine's, I don't know what yours is related to, Marcus, but mine's, we both made a pretty risky pick at the start of the year going Daisy Thomas. And it really just didn't work out. Like, he's shown signs at different times of the year of exactly why we did pick him, but just started the season off so slowly and then got injured. So lost a whole bunch of money in doing so, which made it quite difficult. And I then went Daisy to Murphy. Paid top dollar for Murphy. Murphy started off the year absolutely on fire. A couple of weeks after that, I made him captain against GWS, and he got about 80. I think he had three scores under 100 and then got injured and scored about 30 and lost another 130,000. So in that process, lost a whole bunch of money. And just to compound the problem even more, I traded Murphy to Stanton. Stanton was averaging about 140 at the time. You said there's no way in hell he could sustain that. And I said,
yeah,
whatever, mate, I'm taking him anyway. And he has just been atrocious since. Like, I think he's averaged about 80 since then. He's down around the 400,000 mark. So it's a combination of moves. It's all basically, if Daisy hadn't got injured, none of that would have happened. And it's just led me to losing so much money, so many points. And I can't believe that I'm ranked 1300th after having to go through that.
Yeah, well, I think I've probably suffered the most in the rucks, I think, Mark. Mumford to Nick Nat was okay in round four, but if I brought Ryder in instead, I would be one donut better off because Nick Nat was a late withdrawal and cost me a donut, and as well as a few points more. I traded Griffin in for Ryder when Ryder got injured. I got Ryder in just after his bye in round 11. And of course, he gets injured in round 16. So I only lost five rounds of my team. It's quite a few poor decisions at round 3, Mark. I remember last year I didn't pull a trigger on a corrective rookie trade. This year I decided to trade out Dixon. Traded him to Kennedy. Of course, Kennedy started to stall. I only traded him out for 240k a few rounds later. But Dixon came back into the team a bit later on, as mature recruits do, and I think peaked at about 300. So I essentially wasted a trade there. Yeah, there's some regrettable choices, like bringing in Del Santo, Cloak, Hearn. Michael Johnson I brought in at 495k, and I'm pretty sure he's averaged something like 75 since then, and he's at 370 now. So a few trading moves that I made in terms of completing my team. Didn't pick my premiums quite as well. I think the reason I'm at about 230th is my starting team was really quite strong, and I think the mid-pricer strategy was the one to go with this year, considering the options we had, and I sort of traded myself out of contention.
Yeah, you're definitely, if even the top teams, I think, have had a few trades really not go their way this year. Like, I mean, Tippett just had a huge influence on my season. I brought Tippett in. He scored 125 the first week. I thought I was a genius, and then he scored about 30 points in the next 4 weeks. Just ridiculous stuff like that can have a huge influence on your season. But I think even teams in right near the top are dealing with that sort of stuff as well at different stages.
The real question is, Mark, is there anything that you've learned from any trading mistakes that you made this year?
I probably don't pick the premium priced midfielders if you can avoid it. Try not to pick midfielders when they're at their absolute most, because most midfielders will have down patches unless their name's Gary Ablett. And
I think that's also the how the game's devolved. Maybe 2 years ago, you'd probably say a little bit different, but especially now, I've got to agree with you. With the amount of collision injuries that happen, especially to our stars who tend to put their head over the ball a little bit more, the amount of soft tissue injuries that are in the game, the chance of a player being substituted out earlier because the game's already won, he's a tiny bit sore, and they're just happy to put him on ice. There's a lot more. You're a lot more likely to get a premium that's going to have a poor game. I definitely agree with you there.
Yeah, and it's funny because I've been such an advocate in the past of picking up these cheaper midfielders, and I've had so much success with it myself in the past. So, yeah, I probably just went against my own rules this year and was just looking for the best of the best and trying to get the highest scoring mids, and it just really didn't work out that way.
I think it's all probably about getting a balance, Mark. You probably came about that because last year, you know, you may have not gone for another of the top liners, which maybe knocked you out of contention. I know I overcorrected for a few things. It's hard to get the nail the balance every year.
Did you learn anything from your biggest mistakes or worst moves?
Yeah, it'd probably be just in terms of timing my trades. I tend to look at players that have performed really well so far and assume that they're going to keep on keeping on. I think Hearn was probably a bit risky considering where West Coast were as a team, how well they'd been performing, and then how well he'd been scoring considering that team's performance. It was probably a bit unrealistic for me to assume that he'd keep that up. I think since I brought him into my team, he's been quite a major disappointment. The players, like, trying to pick a player that you assume they'll play into form is a really risky thing to do. I think Nick Del Santo's probably fallen to that sword. He hasn't really come on and never really found the next gear that I thought he would, just because, you know, he had been in previous years. I assumed that, you know, he'd turn it on again, but of course that didn't eventuate. And the same happened with Cloak. And even though I got him at a bargain of about 380k, he's really ended up being a dead player, because every time he's come on, he scored worse than my bench player. And the rest of the time, he's sitting on the bench.
I think Del Santo is probably a difficult one, though, because so many times in the past, he has actually maybe had that poor patch and then really got going and averaged heaps for the rest of the year. And he does seem to have that patchy sort of form. So it's possible that you just got a bit unlucky with that one, and that if you take that lesson out of it and overcorrect next year, it might actually cost you points, and you might miss players that actually are going to come good.
I guess that's the thing, Mark. You find that you always overcorrecting a little bit either way, because it's really hard to nail it exactly right. And if we did, we wouldn't be talking from, 700 points of the victor. We'd be, talking about it, when we're sitting in the top 20 saying, isn't this the best? But of course, only a rare few people actually are able to say they didn't overcorrect and got everything, spot on.
One thing that I'm really curious about is you've said that the rucks were the worst part of the season for you. I think you probably would have said the same last year. Is that right?
Yeah. And I think this year, John Griffin was especially disappointing for me. I was on holiday, so I'm going to try and make a bit of an excuse for myself. And I only had an hour running through Singapore looking for a computer to make that trade. But I did have about 10 minutes of sitting down and actually looking at the stats. And I picked Griffin over McAvoy was my number two option. And I think McAvoy would have been a much better option. And I feel especially burned by that because, one, I sort of fall victim to this when I bring a player in that I like their scoring pattern more so than their playing ability. And that doesn't quite translate. I think Griffin had played four really tough ruck opposition and averaged about 100, and he had four really easy opposition coming. So I'd assume that because he scored 160 in one game he played against Gold Coast last year, that might translate. And I got sucked into that sort of thinking and trying to guess players rather than I just know McAvoy's a quality player. I brought him in last year and he did average 120 through a certain patch before Cozzy started affecting his scoring. But of course, McAvoy turned out to be a much better selection than that most people could have called, but I got, sort of sucked in by scores, and I think it's probably a bit more dangerous to do that in the rucks. I knew he was going to get, eventually under threat from Sanderlands, and I think Griffin misses the last 3 weeks for me.
So what do you take into next year from that? Like, are you going to do something different with your starting rucks next year, or are you just going to really assess that in the preseason?
I think the thing I learned the most from the rucks, and this is really also more of a development of the modern game, is that rucks just go down a lot. You're really hard pressed to be able to find a ruckman that's going to line up for all 22 games. I think that's really unrealistic. So one, you got to really look out for a deep bench. And I think we rolled the dice this year, Mark, you and I, and quite a lot of people in the community going with Giles at ruck three. But of course, that led us to be really vulnerable to, all those three rookies actually getting a game, and Stephenson and Redden at various points were both out, which was really threatening. And as well as that, you've got your number one ruck, which is a decent chance to miss the occasional game as well. So I think in hindsight, it would have been a better move to probably play it a little bit safer. I know some people got away to a really good start. I think McIntosh up to a certain point was an absolute flyer for people, and Marich has been an absolute killer, together with that combo. But I think moving forward, I'm going to stick more towards the value price ruckman and definitely look toward having deep benches moving forward.
Interesting. I think I'd be pretty hard pressed not to pick Naito Nui next year or one of those super premium ruckmen, just because their scoring potential is so high. But yeah, those mid price ruckmen, bringing one of them in would have probably worked pretty well this year.
It'd be hard to pass up. Who do we have next year, Mark? Though Lauenberger and who's the other one? McIntosh again,
I don't know what Mumford's price will be like. I guess he's played quite a few games, but it hasn't totally set the world on fire.
Because I think the one thing you can probably identify from the last couple of years is just if you're playing number one ruck, you're going to do pretty damn well. And I think if we'd just sort of been more definitive on that about Ivan Marich, that a lot more people would have picked him up than actually did.
Sure. So let's get on to some positive stuff. What was your best move of the year?
That's really tough one. I think probably where I went best was Paul Plesia to Pendlebury in round six. I think that just really set my season up. And I know Pendlebury got injured, so it wasn't ideal. But just I got a really fast upgrading this season. I started in round six and I didn't let up. Every single week there was an upgrade all the way through to the bye period. That combination really pushed me up the rankings in the lead up to the bye period and during the bye period. So Definitely the fast upgrades was a big thing and something that I was really keen to make amends on after last year. And I think a lot of people tried a similar method and may have got a bit unlucky with injuries. And so maybe from that point of view, got a bit lucky with getting an injury-free run that enabled me to keep hitting those upgrades.
It's interesting. I think you'd actually planned pretty much that trade pre-season.
Yeah, poor Plesia to Pendlebury, exactly, yeah. So, yeah, one thing I do regret is I think this year with the way the buys were structured out, and I think most people probably came to this realization when they were planning for their buys more seriously about 4 to 5 rounds out or 6 rounds out even, that if I'd actually planned from the buys right from the start of the season, and I know it's really hard to say, but there were certain moves that became a little more obvious when certain parts of the jigsaw puzzle were locked in the forward line. If I just looked at my locks and said, you know, I definitely want Dangerfield, I definitely want side bottom, you know, now considering I really want these players, my 6th and 7th picked forwards, I can probably pick players that they're not as great as selections, but if I'd picked them, the buy structure would have worked out a lot better. And, I could have, you know, possibly gained 100 points or 200 points out of that if I just selected a different player at the start of the season. And I think Scott Thompson, in hindsight, was a lot better pick than I made him out to be, simply for the fact that he was playing round 11. And yeah, I should have paid a bit more closer attention to that at the start.
Well, we'll get another chance at those buys next year by the sounds of things. Best trade this year has had a fair bit of luck to it, and that's the Buddy to Beams trade. I was going to have a donut. Buddy was going to be out for a couple of weeks. I knew I'd probably cover 2 donuts there. Thought I might get about 250 points, but because Buddy missed so many games, Ben Beams has just totally dominated. It's gotten me 1,000 points. Like, it's made a huge ranking difference to me. Probably 5,000 ranking spots. I haven't actually looked that close, but yeah, that's probably been the most influential trade of the season. But I think there was a fair bit of luck in that one. The actual best trades that I think that I've done after round 3, a lot of the times you'll try and do a rookie correction. Now, you said that Dixon to Kennedy was one of your worst trades of the year. Well, Dixon to Treloar, I think, is actually one of my best trades of the year. I know Dixon came back, but he did come back a bit later. It would have cost me a couple of donuts. And Treloar has just been so unbelievably good in the latter part of this year in scoring points on my field, 100 every week just about. He's just gone way beyond expectations. He's got the dual position status, so he's scored me heaps of points. And getting rid of Ledger straight away, like, if I hadn't have done that and if I had have held Ledger, my team wouldn't have been able to build value so quickly, and I wouldn't have been able to generate the money and the moves that I made further on. I actually did Ledger to Toby Green, and everyone knows how good Green's been this year. He'd have to be some sort of chance for the Rising Star. Ball magnet, possession machine, he was a bit more expensive, but I sort of had looked at him before the preseason, but then he didn't really play in the preseason, and you never sort of really know what you're going to get with these rookies. But Treloar and Green were just absolutely fantastic for me when I brought them in, so I was pretty happy with those moves.
Now, Mark, surprises of the season, which players in the Supercoach sense surprise you the most in terms of improvement?
Improvement, you'd have to say, like, we picked Dangerfield, we were like, yeah, we have to pick Dangerfield. He's done a lot in the preseason, but we've seen that before. We knew the risk that we were taking, and we thought he might average 105 and we would be absolutely stoked. He's averaged 115. Like, he just could not have expected that. My man Cochin, hopefully, like, I'm just praying he sneaks a Brownlow. I know that Gary and Job are massive, a massive opposition for him going into that camp, but, like, he's killing the coaches award, and like Juddy, get an early Brownlow could set him up for the rest of his career. So Cochin and Naito Nui, like, I didn't think he'd be quite this good. I think everyone would have been on him if he hadn't been injured in the preseason. But against Collingwood, he was absolutely sensational on the weekend.
I think Kieran Jack for mine was a really surprising one. I definitely thought that he'd improve having already won a best and fairest, but to be able to be averaging 114, especially after a really rocky start to the season, I think it's been certainly a surprise. And Shane Tuck as well, and just the contested players seem to have really just been able to notch up a 115 average. You know, Cochin, Tuck, Jack, that I'd previously not assumed that they'd be able to hit that type of average without, you know, at least having a more developed outside game. So those players surprised me, and in the future, you know, I'm going to look a bit more closely at that contested side, because I think Dangerfield has proven, you know, just from watching him week to week, just how that valuable they are. Even when he gets tagged, even when he gets a poor game, I think his lowest score for the year is 86, and that's just because he can just go in and under and pluck the ball out when he needs to.
Yep, for sure. Series, or just one lesson that you've learned this year that you'll take into next year?
I'm probably going to trade more aggressively in the finish, even more aggressively still. I held out from about round 16 onwards, because I didn't want to have too few trades for the last few rounds. But I think I would have been better off just burning the trades. I think if I trade the Land Franklin to Dane Beams, I'd be comfortably in the top 100 now. Very, very comfortably in the top 100. And that makes me hurt a lot, considering at that point I had three trades. And it was rather silly for me to hold on that tight. I think one thing this year that I was quite keen on, Mark, which I know a lot of people said was a bit interesting, is the talk about, you know, even after you finish your team, if you're in the position to be able to upgrade your bench players to push, you know, a subpar premium like, you know, I had Cloak and Lake onto the bench. So, I mean, all you're getting is the difference between, you know, let's say a Lake and an Enright. But I still think it was worthwhile doing. It would have given me an extra, you know, 30 points per game for, you know, 6-7 rounds. But I took the cautious route, and people, you know, sort of had their doubts on it. But I think I would have been better off proceeding as I had initially planned.
Yeah, see, I take a different lesson out of the same information, I guess. I think that you're better off using those trades to just, if some one of your players gets injured, just trade them out immediately like a buddy, rather than trying to put bench cover on for situations that you don't know whether they're going to happen or not.
Yeah, I guess that's a reasonable point, Mark, but I sort of found that this year, especially toward the, considering I have a key position forward in my team, like Travis, that, and I have a swing player like Michael Johnson, who can be quite an inconsistent player as well, that it's either I'll have an injury or a suspension on my team, or I'll either have a key position player that's coming up against a top four side that I really don't want to have to take a risk on. So I guess different sides of the coin.
Yeah. So my major lesson learned this year is don't believe clubs when it comes to injuries. We've had so much bullcrap information this year, like Waters in Scotland. They were said to be out for more than 4 weeks. They were out for one, and they came back, and they've dominated when they came back. So many people would have been burnt by that. On the other end, you had like a Pendlebury saying, oh, I might be out for 2 weeks and then I'll be back, or a Buddy, I might be out for 2 weeks and then I'll be back. And they've both been 6 weeks injuries, where it would have been great to just trade them straight away. So I'm not sure what the lesson is. I'm not sure whether you just trade them straight away or you hold on to them, but it's been a really difficult year to believe clubs when it comes to injuries. And another thing I've been really disappointed about this year is the amount of late withdrawals, and not just like late withdrawals that are not foreseen, but like late withdrawals that are known, completely known about on Thursday afternoon or Friday, but aren't actually mentioned, anything about until just an hour before the game. That must be extremely frustrating for the casual players that maybe aren't like following it that closely on Twitter or wherever it might be. That's been really disappointing this year, and I know that Hardwick sort of complained about that happening with Sanderlands a couple of weeks ago, and the coaches are upset and the fantasy community is upset, and there's a fair bit of anger out there about that, I think.
It'll be interesting whether, you know, it keeps going down this path, and whether, you know, it might even get worse. I think that hopefully we get to a stage where they can just be transparent about it either way, either go and just name 25 or be more strict and say you have to name the 22, and you've got to be more rigid about those late withdrawals, because it's not just relevant to, you know, fantasy industry, but the betting industry as well. And that's something I've heard a lot of complaints out of gamblers recently.
Sure, hopefully the bettors can get in there, because money's going to speak more than us fantasy coaches, I think. Yeah. Golden rules. Did you learn any golden rules this year, or were there any reinforced that feel like you want to share?
Yeah, I think the big one is just the biggest golden rule I think that I've learned this year is that you play the season, not the rules or the game, or you take what players are of value, what the good picks are each season, and reassess your structure based on where the value most presents itself, or where the best picks are, or the high scorers are. I think the dangerous thing to do every year is go into it with a preconceived notion of, I want to do X and X and X. I'm definitely going to have an all strict guns and rookie strat, or only mid-pricer strat. I think just look at the plays that where the value is at. Last year, there was heaps of value in the forward line. In the back line in terms of cheap backs. I think this year it may have moved a little bit to the forward line in terms of being able to look at players like Dangerfield and Sidebottom. And, if anyone had any preconceived notions of, Dangerfield has failed us so many years in a row after being a breakout pick year after year after year. And, we don't like mid prices because last year people that averaged 85 tend to be pretty shitty picks going into the season, then, people might not have picked up Dangerfield. So I think that's the most important thing is, you just play what's in front of you, reassess your strategy based on the players available, not decide the strategies and fit the players in where appropriate.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice. And I think that's and a strategy that we've both taken in the last couple of years that has worked out pretty well for us. Really not picking your team just based on the players, but yeah, looking for that value. And I think it's worked out pretty well for us. It'll be so interesting next year with what we do, because there's not going to be all these cheap rookies that are going to play every week from GWS and the Suns. So I think that's really going to potentially alter strategies. Yeah, that's going to be a huge discussion next preseason, I think.
Yeah, and it'll also be a bit more interesting considering, you said lack of rookies, together with the fact that it's now been 2 years with the sub rule, extra the first year with both GWS and Gold Coast players in the system. Next year we're going to have a lot of players that haven't really played much football, or could potentially who in 5 years ago may not have gotten the game yet, but may have been introduced as the sub and had their price tag slightly inflated. And players like Motlop this year, who are at 220,000 that we want to pick but couldn't, I think we'll have a lot more next year, and it should make the mid-pricer strategy even more prominent, which I think always makes the year a bit more exciting, a bit more, there's a bit more variety when mid-prices become relevant, I think.
Yeah, I think everyone likes to get reward from picking that player that's going to improve more than the other players that they already sort of know about. They've seen about him a bit, but that's just going to have that big improvement. I think that is where the greatest satisfaction in the game comes from, which is why yourself and I have sort of been more reluctant than some other coaches to adapt the guns and rookies approach, just in general. So yeah, the golden rules that I'm looking at is you must consider the buys with your starting side. I think that even teams that I saw this year that planned reasonably poorly around the buys, but they did some planning, they gained a benefit over the buys and they increased their ranking, and you can make up quite a bit of ground. So I think that really trying to balance your team across the buys and with rookies and premiums, as much as it can be quite a complex and difficult task, I think that there's quite a lot of value in it, and you can definitely make up points across those buys. And the other thing I want to look at is pick durable players. It's something that happens every season. You sort of get sucked into these people that are going to miss a game or two, and it can be quite difficult. Like Selwood this year has been a really good pick. He scored really, really well in the games that he's played, but he's just still missed a couple, and it's still just put some doubts over his selection, I think. So, yeah, looking at players that I think can play 22 games next year.
It's interesting. I don't think we've ever really had a season. Well, this year it was sort of in the back of my mind, but it wasn't really a relevant consideration where you actually look at a player and go, he always gets concussed, or he puts his head over the ball way too much. Maybe let's not pick him this season, because he's been missing a game a season because of head knocks.
Yeah. But like, I mean, there's obviously a whole bunch of luck involved still. Goods plays every game since the AFL started, I think. But This year missed six in a row. So
started him. That was great.
Yeah, it might have just been a really bad season. But I guess the pick the durable players comes up because we're talking about mid prices. One that's going to be very cheap next season is Robbie Gray. Such terrible, and Mark McGrath as well. Both have such terrible injury histories. Like even beyond the injury for this year, it's going to be. I think those two players in particular are going to be really interesting selections because they might be so cheap that they're really difficult to avoid.
Yeah, and again, though, I'd still prefer. You know, if you're going to take the injury risk, you'd rather take it with your starting team than take it with the players that you trade in. And, you know, I think players, you know, coaches with who started players like Waters, who'd previously had super shaky injury history, that sort of paid off for them. And there are a few other examples of that where other coaches, passed up on a player because of their injury history, like Daniel Wells, when he finally broke out, and because everybody passes up because of the injury history, they become that much more valuable when you actually do pick their breakout. So it's an interesting.
So since we talked a little bit about 2013 and a couple of those mid prices that we might be looking at, it started getting me a little bit excited for preseason next year, mate. I already can't wait to start the first podcast for 2013. But some players that you were looking at, I'll be looking at my man Cochin. I find it very unlikely that I would start without Cochin next year.
I find it just amazing that somehow every episode, I think you still manage to say the name Trent Cochin about five times before it's over.
I just want to make everyone clear of my man love for Cochin. I also mentioned Travis Cloak, or Kendall, as we like to refer to him around here, every episode if I can. And yeah, I do like talking Cochin up, and that's because he just delivers game after game. So I'm very excited about him. Murphy will be an interesting one. It'll be interesting to see if he gets a bit of a discount. He also had some lower games this year, and yet has come home pretty strong. So also one of my favorites in the past, Murphy. And the other player I probably would be looking at would be Nick Natanui. He's just mind-blowing his potential. So yeah, they're the three at the moment that sort of stand out to me, although it's going to be very hard to fit Cochin and Murphy into my midfield. Ablett obviously gets a spot given his just ridiculous scoring potential, and there's some others out there like Pendlebury and co, that Dangerfield beams, that might be asking for a spot too.
I think I'm more looking, you know me, I like my cheapies and trying to pick those mid-price players, so I'm licking my lips at maybe Bunnell on the forward line. If he can bring a bit more consistency to his game, we've seen the scoring potentials there. I think Jetta's a really interesting prospect. It's a bit unfortunate that, you know, he's kicked that many goals and he's still only averaging 81 for the season. But then you think about his game style, the amount of Ks that he can push out at the speed that he can, and how dangerous he is in front of goal. And he's the type of player that, you know, when he develops, can average 120, 130 a game. So I'll be certainly keeping an eye on him.
That's a huge call.
Jetta, yeah, personally, I think he can be that good. I'll be looking at a few of the young blokes and hopefully they can come on. I think the back line's always an interesting place to look for value, Mark. Who knows? Will a North Melbourne defender finally establish himself as a bona fide premium again? Maybe Grimer becomes a good selection if you can finally put that full preseason in and stay injury free. I like your optimism, Mark. I like your optimism.
Yaron will be an interesting one. He should be pretty heavily discounted. I think just there's going to be a lot of Blues players in general, I guess, that are going to be a bit cheaper considering the horribleness of this year for them.
Surely Tommy Rockcliffe is a lock if he's only priced at, you know, to average 100.
Yeah, well, I don't know whether a lock's the right way of going about it because, like, why has he been down this year, and is he going to be scoring highly enough to hold down a midfield spot?
And Dale Thomas is at 95, Mark. Surely we picked him up at 115 this year. We've got to pick him up next year.
That's a very good point. Ah, oh, geez. Once burnt, twice shy. I think there's a few people like that.
I think that might be the same for you with Stanton, Mark. But
The thing about Stanton is that he's 370 at the moment. I just looked. I paid 650 or something for him. That's just so depressing. But because he was so good earlier in the year, you would think that his average, like, would just, it's not, he's not going to be that cheap.
Yeah. I mean, even if he's priced to 104, you got to think, you know, if Essendon, you know, if next year is their breakout season as a group, and it well could be, you know, his scoring could quite comfortably go up to 115. So that'd be an interesting one. I think Goodsy will be a tough one because he'll be priced at about 90 mark, but the talk on him will be, is he too old? I think next year again.
For sure.
And you know, if he doesn't actually show that he's turned form, it'd be interesting to see exactly which coaches go with him. I think Sanderlands is an interesting prospect considering.
That's, yeah, I do, like he showed his scoring potential on the weekend. It's absolutely massive. He can just tear games apart. And you would think that there's a good chance Freo are going to improve again next year. You would think the extra year away from the foot injury could make it a bit better with Sanderlands, but like it's almost guaranteed that he's going to miss at least two games. Like that's a really difficult proposition because he could score 15 more than any other ruck per game.
Surely two blokes, Nathan Fife and Luke Hodge, they'll be locked in every team. They're both averaging 86 at the moment.
Yeah, Hodgie's been one of my favourite super coaches for a long time. He brought me a lot of joy early on in my super coach career, especially when he was a back as well. His ability to play out a season looks like very, very low as well, a bit like Sandland. So you got to think about your ability to cover these people because you might be playing rookies to cover them for quite a few weeks or they might be costing you an extra trade. Similar with Fife, but I think Fife is going to be in an awful lot of teams, especially if he's available as a forward.
I don't think he will be, unfortunately, next year, though.
Yeah, that's another question. Like, are Beams, Sidebottom, Dangerfield, Fife, Zaharakis, these sort of players, are they going to be available? Bunnell, are they going to be available as a forward next year? You'd have to think probably not, like, because they're certainly not playing as forwards.
Yeah. All right. I think that's it in terms of discussion topics, Mark. Do you want to leave the audience with anything? The last words for 2012?
Yes. I'm just doing a report from this week's Supercoach weekend. Marcus doesn't do so well. I beat him in the grand final. Everyone's happy and I get to celebrate for the next 12 months.
Yeah, and I'm forecasting the exact opposite, Mark. I need to beat last year's score, last year's ranking, so I'll be looking to make a big impression. But I know you have an extra trade up your sleeves to use against me, so it's going to be a big week in Supercoach. Hopefully your Supercoach coach can make a shake at the rankings and take the number one league for the year. And, Mark, it'll be interesting to see how we go against each other in the Aces League grand final.
It absolutely will, mate. Good luck. Hopefully you do beat your ranking, and everyone out there should look out for big things from your Supercoach coach next year.
Yeah. Thanks, everyone, so much for the year so far. It's been absolutely fantastic to have you on board listening through to us, whether it be through iTunes or yscc.com.au. Like Mark said, we've got more planned for next year. We're going to revamp the site. So make sure to head back over to yscc.com.au next year. And Mark and I will be back and sure to provide you with more great fantasy content in the future years. Thanks, and all the best for the last week.